Welcome to Indonesia dan Lain-Lain,
the podcast about everything you need to know about Indonesia.
I'm Hayat Indriyatno, an editor at Mongo Bay, the environmental news website, and previously at the Jakarta Post and the Jakarta Globe.
And I'm Erin Cook. I used to be at the Jakarta Globe with Hayat, and now I run Dari Mulut Ke Mulut.
Okay, so we've got a lot of news to go through today. The big one, obviously, is tonight. This is we're recording this on Monday the 16th. Tonight, the government just finished revising the draft of the criminal code bill.
Yes, and this one's been highly controversial for months.
Yeah, lots of really controversial articles in there. That would make life just so much more troublesome, I guess. But we'll get into that.
We'll get there.
And so, yeah, they're expecting this bill to pass in next week. Right.
So it's one to keep an eye on for
sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely. So, yeah, we'll get into that later. But first, we've got some updates for you.
Yes. So it's September in Indonesia, which always means haze.
Haze, yes.
And it's been crazy this year. As we said last week, it was heading towards kind of 2015 areas, which was the worst it had been in a long time.
Yeah.
And now we're there.
And now we're there, right. So, it's a big thing when, Singapore is obviously hit, Malaysia is obviously hit, and I believe Southern Thailand as well.
Yes. And as soon as it gets to Thailand, that's when it's bad, right? Is that a fair way to go?
I would say that's pretty bad. And, the government's response has just been awful to this whole thing. So we've got the government blaming everyone but themselves. So, let's take Presidential Chief of Staff, Muldoko. He said it was a test from God. He basically blamed God. If I was the big guy, I would smite him right now, send down a thunderbolt, take him out.
Yeah.
That was the president's chief of staff. Then we've got Wiranto, the chief security minister, who first, he claimed it was the fires were being set politically. So it was like people who were peeved at the last election.
Which is such a bizarre.
It is such a silly thing to say. I've said it before, if you've ever been indicted for a war crime, maybe shut the fuck up. And then, of course, he later went on to blame smallholders,
who always cop the blame. And
who always cop the blame?
It's either smallholders or Malaysian and Singaporean companies. Right. There's never any
Indonesian companies?
Never maybe? Any Indonesian companies. Ones that might be owned by people in the cabinet, perhaps.
And then, just today, what was trending on Twitter, Erin?
Oh, no. Sawit Baik.
Sawit Baik. Palm oil is good.
It was a
palm oil good.
Probably one of the worst timed PR campaigns ever.
So they had all the buzzers coming out for it. And basically, they're trying to convince people that palm oil is good and it's not the cause of this deforestation and the fires.
And by earlier this evening, it was number two on trending. And it was all photos that look like they've just come from hell.
Right. And let's just be clear. This the website Sawit Baik and then the hashtag and everything about it. This is an initiative of the communications ministry. This is the ministry of shutting shit down.
Yes.
And they started this up. So, I'm not impressed by them. Not at all.
No. I don't know. It's a really weird one. I know that it gets very nationalistic, very shut up Malaysia, shut up Singapore. But what really worries me is that people in Sumatra and Kalimantan are the worst affected.
Exactly. Because
Singapore's having a shit one, but a child died in Sumatra.
Right. And it's, I think towards the end of our last season, we were talking about the air quality in Jakarta. And people were up in arms. It was 150 on the AQI and whatever it is. It is freaking 10 times that in Palangkaraya. We just checked tonight. It's 1,400 something.
Which is really scary. So 200 is the top end of unhealthy.
Right.
So nearing 2,000 has got to be unlivable.
Right. I mean, they should just make a new category, as in you're dead.
Yeah. Yep. You are Kalimantan during haze. Yeah. It's a whole separate thing.
And, the environment and forestry minister, Siti, who's, she keeps denying that this is a problem from Indonesia. She's saying the smoke is coming from Malaysia, which if you look at the fire alerts, the hotspots,
they're all
in Indonesia.
There's, three in Sabah. It's not their fault.
Yeah. So, not good look for Indonesia right now doing with all this happening and then, the optics with Sawit Baik, come on. Seriously.
It's a really bizarre decision. I don't know. Indonesia's always copying it from everyone else in ASEAN. Why then try to have an argument that's not going to work at all?
Right. And you know what? Malaysia has, offered help, assistance, as they do, because they do have that ASEAN transboundary haze agreement that, they are allowed to offer assistance from other countries, not just Malaysia, obviously. Other countries can help as well. But
Indonesia's not interested.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really just handing out the doctor's masks and all that, like, yeah, it's going to save everybody.
It's not going to save anyone.
Let alone the planet.
Yeah.
I guess.
So, yeah, that's the haze. And, you know, we just actually got a message from DJ Khaled. He wanted to say something to the Minister City.
Congratulations. You played yourself.
Okay.
He's right.
Okay. So, you know, that's obviously the big news happening right now. Last week we did have, you know, some sad news, obviously.
Yes, very sad news, very big news.
So it was the passing of former President B.J. Habibie.
So he's the third president.
The third president of Indonesia. He took over when Suharto resigned in May 98. Served for only, was it 15 months, I think?
Yeah, 17 months. Very short term.
Yeah, very short term until the first truly free and fair elections were held for parliament. Habibie, of course, we should remember, he was like, in Indonesia's history, he's the only president to have been born outside of Java.
Ah, Sulawesi. Yeah,
yeah? Yeah, Sulawesi. Yep. Pare, South Sulawesi. So, yeah, that's pretty historic. But, you know,
that is.
There is so much that he's left in terms of a legacy, even though he was really only a caretaker president, because he was sort of like bridging the transition between the Suharto New Order.
Well, this is what I find very interesting. I've never seen... I very rarely seen it anywhere, let alone just Indonesia, where a politician passes away and the outpouring of love is so universal.
Right.
But I thought that his legacy was a bit more complicated given that he came out of Suharto's cabinet.
Right.
Is that, how's kind of that scene?
Well, you can understand that he wasn't like a politician in the mold of Suharto. He was not someone who was steeped in power, who was hungry for power. He was a technocrat. He had these pie in the sky ideas for how to get Indonesia forward through technology. That was his whole thing. He just wanted his projects to be funded so that Indonesia could advance. So it was not about cronyism with him. It was really about the betterment of the country. And you know, people say he's sort of like a mad scientist in that regard. But he did, you know, apart from the technology, which, you know, unfortunately got sort of put on the back burner because of the IMF bailout.
Oh, of course, yeah, right. Much bigger, those immediate.
Those are some of the more onerous conditions of the bailout deal. He did so much. Okay, like, first of all, he freed political prisoners.
Yes, including Timor's Shanana Gusmao.
Shanana Gusmao, I'm sure you've seen that video by now. I think everyone's seen it.
I don't think I could ever watch it again. It is incredible. So Shanana Gusmao had been a...
He was a political prisoner. He was one of many who was freed by... Habibie, and Habibie actually went on, and this is to this day a very controversial, very polarizing issue among Indonesians, is he allowed a referendum for independence.
Yes, which was just recently celebrated, the anniversary of celebrated a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And what really, I read a lot about that. And what really struck me is so many young Timorese, like young, like 18, 20-year-olds, were saying thank you, B.J. Habibie, for helping this happen. You're one of our heroes,
right?
Even though we're not Indonesian anymore.
Yeah, and so
that's
know,
a pretty strong legacy.
Yeah, that is a pretty strong legacy. You know, obviously it was fucked up by a certain, you know, military general who decided who he wanted to commit war crimes. But you know, let's not get into that. You know, apart from Timor. And by the way, can you see any Indonesian leader today allowing such a referendum for a province that wants to break away?
It's very timely, isn't it, that we had both the anniversary of the referendum and B.J. Habibie's passing while this is happening out east again. Yeah. And that comparison is being, I don't know, probably not entertained as much as it should be.
Right. Obviously, another of his big things was, you know, decentralization. He also allowed more... political parties to be formed, so anyone today can form a political party, so which is why we just have such a boisterous election season every time.
So I've got him to thank. Yes.
Yeah, so we have him to thank for the PSI. God damn it,
we're back.
And then, of course, you know, the big one, press freedom.
Yes, and it was huge and it was very quick, wasn't it? It was something he really wanted to do.
Yeah, so
early on,
you know, we're here sitting here talking to you today, you know, myself, Erin, Jessica, our producer, obviously Lisa, this podcast creator and producer, we all come from the media environment. Mm. So I think it's no exaggeration to say we do owe a huge debt to Habibie for
absolutely
for, you know, this legacy of allowing freedom of expression for the press.
That's when you read about pre-Reformasi media in Indonesia. It's a different world. It's
right.
Completely different.
Right. And so, you know, we had this outpouring, you know, of expression once that bill was passed in 99. And so we had the mushrooming of media outlets, like, you know, like crazy. I mean, some credible, some not so credible. You know, you always have those. But
take
at least,
bad with the good.
Yeah. But, you know, at the end of the day, you do have a choice for who you want to listen to, who you want to get your news from. And unfortunately, and I hate to say this, it's almost like the legacy is dying with Habibie.
It's very odd timing, I think. It's he's been sick for a while, but it's also been a while that the legacy is dying.
Right. And so, you know, we have the government of today. It's fated. It's you know, everyone's saying, you know, this is a reformist government. But if you look at the actions they've been taking, and we're talking about this in our discussion of the criminal code, the KUHP, press freedom is not something that I think we should take for granted anymore. So like recently, Tempo magazine, their latest issue, it's got a picture of Jokowi and you know, behind him a shadow of his face, and the shadow has like a Pinocchio nose.
Oh, Tempo, I don't know how they do this. Their covers are always so simple, but so perfect.
Exactly, yeah. It says so much. And their heading was Janji Tinggal Janji. The promises are still promises. So basically, promises have not been fulfilled.
Yep.
And essentially, it was Tempo's jab at the Jokowi presidency for, you know, what they perceive as his undermining of the Corruption Eradication Commission, the KPK.
Which we're also going to get to quite in depth.
Yes, we will get to
very soon.
Yeah, in probably in the next episode because this is a big issue.
It's a huge one. Yeah. Right?
And so, yeah, so Tempo is very upset about that. That wasn't the first cover that they did about it in their Koran Tempo. The day after Habibie died, they had the same, they obviously had the, you know, R.I.P. Habibie. They said of Wiedersehen.
Of Wiedersehen, yes.
Am I pronouncing that right?
After former president spent so long in Germany.
Yes. So
I was personally very confused by that. So
yeah. So they had the double cover. They had that Auf Wiedersehen for Habibie, and on the other one they had the what was it?
Selamat Jalan.
Selamat Jalan. So basically, it's you know, condolences, R.I.P. that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And again, Jokowi's face on it. and Selamat Jalan in this case, the R.I.P. was for the KPK.
Yeah.
So now this group. Probably not formally affiliated with the president, but calling itself Jokowi Mania.
Yeah.
He has reported Tempo magazine with a Pinocchio cover to the press council.
It's interesting because I think that Tempo is kind of, I don't know, all for equal slagging people on its cover. Well, not slagging at all. Equal criticizing.
Oh, absolutely.
And
yeah.
It's interesting. And this isn't the first time it's been unhappy with Jokowi, but it's one of the first times that kind of a fan group.
Yeah, this is pretty much a fan group. And
it
so
sounds targeted.
It's just the way that things are going that, you know, such a biting, you know, cover that everyone should celebrate. They should get everyone thinking. It's
I was just reading that these Jokowi Mania guys want to get it out of all the shops so no one can buy it.
Exactly.
But it's iconic. It's going to be sold out.
I mean, who wants to pull magazines from the bookshelves? That's a very authoritarian thing to do.
Absolutely. Is that what Jokowi wants to?
I don't know if that's what he wants to do, but I'm sure he's not happy with that. Do you remember when at the Globe, one of the copy editors, and I won't say his name here, but you know, God bless
him. I know where this is going.
He came up with a headline for a story whereby Jokowi claimed he hadn't fully read the contents of some bill or something that he signed, and the headline was Jokowi : I don't read what I sign.
Yes, and he got in big trouble. Right. Our coworker.
Yeah, he got in big trouble. He wasn't fired for that, but but I'm just saying that's the kind of thing that, you know, the press should be allowed to get away with because the press is the press. The press is what keeps people on their toes.
Yeah, it's really weird insecurity about his leadership that he's just had another year or another term. What are you afraid of? Just let...
Right. And, you know, talking about things to be afraid of, let's just talk about this. Let's talk about the criminal code revision, okay? It was basically the government finalized their draft tonight that they're going to send to the House. And the House is expected to pass it next week, right? So right before the House period ends and the next batch of legislators gets inaugurated.
Very, very scary. So they've been kind of going back and forth for months, and now it's just going to be rammed 3.
Right. And there was no public discussion for this, by the way.
Which is very scary.
There was so, you know, I mean,
you've got the list here, right?
Yeah, we've got the list. So let's you know, just run through a couple of them.
And we have to give a special thanks to producer Jessica.
Jessica for really Jessica, by the way, was out at the protest today for the against the Kauhape.
Lawan.
Lawan, she says. Okay, so let's take a look at it. Okay, so it's for me one of the most, like, I think one of the most harmful articles in this bill would be the one on abortion. Yeah. So right now, as it stands, you know, a woman can get an abortion if, you know, in certain circumstances, like if the pregnancy endangers her life,
yes, yeah,
or the baby's life, or if the if let's say the pregnancy is the result of a rape or yep, you know, coerced sex.
It's kind of humane, reasonable. Yes, sort
right.
Yeah.
Okay. So now that's not going to happen anymore.
Which is terrifying.
So imagine a woman gets raped and she has to carry the baby through term.
The motivation behind it is really dark.
Right.
That's horrible.
Or a woman carries a baby. The baby's got a, you know, some kind of developmental, you know, condition that
which
either
the get
baby
no
doesn't
help survive for once the baby's born.
Right. And that's assuming the baby lives. And then it's also assuming the mother lives through that condition.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there are conditions whereby the mother's life is in danger. And so, you know, these are going to be illegal now. A woman cannot have an abortion under these circumstances anymore. And so, you know,
it's really sad to see Indonesia going backwards here. I don't think anyone in Southeast Asia is particularly brilliant on women's rights, but Indonesia's certainly been ahead of some of the neighboring regions. Like in the Philippines, it's been horrible for years. Malaysia's been very weird and horrible for years. And now Indonesia wants to make itself weird and horrible.
Yeah, and you know, it's this is not the only article that's, you know, basically criminalizing reproductive rights. We've got this new article that's basically going to outlaw contraception or promotion of contraception. So, you know, right now you walk into Alphamart or Indomart or whatever, and you know, by the counter there you'll usually have the condoms.
Frangers.
Right, is that what you call it?
Yeah.
Okay, that's weird. Yeah, so okay, that's outlawed. You're not allowed to promote contraceptions anymore, contraceptives. You know, with a country that's got a population of 260 million, you think contraceptives is kind of the solution?
Particularly, there are always huge conversations, huge summits and conferences about family planning in Indonesia.
Right.
Why then decide that, I don't know, it does my head in and it's too soon.
Yeah. You know, they do campaign, the government does campaign on, you know, dua anak lebih baik, two kids is best. Well, how are you going to stop having more than two kids if you don't have access?
Bad news for you, Hyatt.
Well, I've got three, so, I'm besides, I'm done for the day. I shut the factory a long time ago.
Oh,
so. Yeah. So now you know. Or at least that's what I tell the ladies. Yeah. Okay. Also, you know, like in the current criminal code, again, this is about maybe not so much reproductive rights, but along that same plane. A spouse can report their spouse to the police if that person, if the individual has an affair.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
But now all non-marital sexual relations are outlawed.
Oh, there are going to be some very gossipy WhatsApp group chats. Get a lot of people in trouble soon.
And so you get your paraerte up in your piece. You'll get, you know, if your neighbor doesn't like that you're living together with someone of a different sex, that's it. You know, that's a crime now. Or at least it will be after next week when the law.
The big one, kind of the one that gets the most focus here, is criminalizing sex without marriage. What is the, outside of marriage, what is the status on that angle as that's going ahead?
Sex outside marriage? Yeah, that's what we're talking about. It's basically any kind of sex outside marriage. What is criminalized right now, before this bill is passed, what is criminalized right now is extramarital affairs.
Yep.
So if you're married and you have sex with someone else, you can be charged.
Yep.
Right. So now,
and
even
now
if you're not married,
if you just meet someone on
Bumble,
for instance.
Yeah. Is that a thing?
Oh, you've been out of the game too long.
Yeah. Well, I'm not in the game anymore. So basically, any form of casual sex is
done for.
Yeah, it's done for. Yeah.
What do you think is the motivation here? Like, what is this just extreme conservatism?
I think so, yeah.
And it's just, yeah.
I think the government's taking a conservative turn.
It's a hell of a turn, yeah.
Yeah, and I think maybe to some extent they were compelled to because of the political dynamics, because, you know, to win an election now, ever since Ahok yeah. in 2017. You've had to pander.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've had to pander to the conservative vote. And I think that's what Jokowi's done here and the government's done here. And yep. so this is what we get. This yeah. is what we get for it. And so yeah. So, you know, there's more to it. I mean, we could keep going on. Okay. They've pretty much just boosted the, you know, any crimes against religion. But get this, the only religions that are protected from, you know, so quote unquote hate speech, which is a very, you know, elastic term, are the official religions. So you can badmouth Jews all you want. And I know some people do.
Yeah,
and you won't get anything for that.
And for instance, a not so well loved sect of Islam is probably going to
not
be covered, I imagine.
Yeah, so yeah, we're talking about like Shias, Ahmadis, those kinds of things, not covered.
Oh god.
So again, only the official religions.
And you were saying it covers shit talking dead people.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, this is the big one. This is the really authoritarian one, if you ask me.
Yeah.
So
this sets a weird stage.
Back in 2016, the Supreme Court actually struck down an article that criminalized the insulting the president. This criminal code, the new criminal code, actually brings that back in.
Yes, right. Yep.
So you can't badmouth I believe the term is penghinaan, insult. Mm-hmm. You can't insult the president. You can't insult the vice president. You can't insult state institutions, so like ministries.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, DJ Khaled, watch out, you know.
Yeah.
You can't insult a dead person.
Which
yeah.
surely must look after one very famous dead person.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing, you know.
I'm scared now. I don't want to say anything yet.
Yes. So yeah, there's a lot going on with this thing, and you know,
It seems to me like there's almost certainly going to be unintended impacts by this.
Oh no doubt,
he's set himself up for an absolute nightmare.
No doubt. What really gets to me about this, you know, obviously there's the authoritarian bent in saying you can't insult the president. Who gets to decide what an insult is, and what's legitimate criticism?
Yeah, absolutely. That's it. If we're already getting up in arms about a tempo cover,
right?
Then what next? Like we've had all those ITE cases with the memes,
mm-hmm. right?
This is that on crack, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. One more that I forgot. Right, on human rights.
Oh, good.
So basically, human rights crimes now. Any enforcement against human rights crimes is not retroactive.
So basically, a lot of people are getting away with shit now.
Right. Anyone responsible for 97, 98, or back all the way back to 65, or anything in between, they're covered, including certain people who took part in Tim 10.
Yeah.
Right. So those guys, you know, under this new criminal code, they would not be affected. Yeah.
That's, what do you even say to that? That's dark. Okay, so Jokowi was very, very into reconciliation. Let's get a dialogue going. Let's talk about it. And now
he did talk about it in his first term, right? And now, you know,
nothing.
Janji tinggal janji, as they say. And so, yeah, it's not just that, but also they've actually raised the bar for human rights violations. So now, in order to actually be accused of committing a human rights violation, you will have to have committed genocide or crimes against humanity.
Right. So
like things like military brutality against civilian populations.
Yes. So say that's like an incident in Lampung wouldn't be covered?
Right, it wouldn't be covered.
Right.
Or you know, police beating peaceful protesters or something like that wouldn't be covered again. That's not a human rights abuse anymore.
Will this make West Papua not technically human rights abuses?
Some would actually argue it's genocide happening right there. Some would argue, but
not on this podcast.
No, we wouldn't say any such thing like that, would we? And so, yeah, so much going on. And then obviously for corruption, it's sort of like we like to think that, or at least we tend to think that the KPK is the only organization that actually takes on corruption.
Mm.
And it is. But the police and the prosecutor's attorney general's office actually do have the authority to do it as well already right now under the criminal code. It's just that this new article in the criminal code on corruption actually makes it easier for, you know, conspirators and associates to get away with not being charged.
Yep.
And of course, you know, right now, like whenever you hear the KPK wins a conviction against someone, there's always a certain jail term and a pretty hefty fine.
Yes.
No more fines.
No more fines.
But yeah, but this is only for corruption cases handled by the police and the Attorney General's office. So, yeah, so there's no more financial disincentive for committing corruption.
Yeah, no more give us back all the money.
Exactly.
Right. Well, that it's going to be a hell of a way to start off the second term.
Yeah, it will be. And, you know, it's looking pretty certain that it is going to pass because, you know, obviously Jokowi, they're rushing this. They didn't ask for a public discussion. They didn't put this before the public, which they usually do with most legislation. This
so one, do you think that means that they're aware that it's going to be extremely...
Oh, they know that it was going to be controversial. I mean, we had Jessica rallying outside their meeting place.
Yep.
By the way, they held this last meeting. It was a closed meeting at the Fairmont Hotel in Sinayan.
Ooh, bougie.
So, you know, the usual press pack and any observers couldn't get in to watch.
Yes, of course.
So, you know, they're really ramming this one through. Yeah.
And I just want to note for our foreign listeners, because I think this probably isn't getting too much of a run outside of Indonesian press, but there is quite a sizable progressive movement against this. And Jessica's not there by herself. There are a lot of people out there trying to fight against it. And it's a tough fight. It's real David and Goliath, and I don't think...
Right. I mean, it's for me, some of these things are just... You're setting up Indonesia for a massive, massive problems up in the future because what happens when you get a population explosion because people don't have access to contraception? I mean, what happens
when you effectively force women to not be able to pick up jobs and enter the labor force because they don't have access?
Exactly. So, you know, some of these things...
Habibie's progress.
Right. I mean, there goes Habibie's progress. I mean, Habibie, obviously, one of his main things was... policy points was women's empowerment.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
That's gone now, isn't it? Yeah. Or it will be next week. Yeah. So obviously the government is fully behind this. The House is going to be fully behind this. They're expected to pass this next week. And then once that's passed, Jokowi will sign it. And
then we'll have to ask Jessica what's next.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a real downer, I think, to
end. You know, don't get bent out of shape. We have more downers for you because we're going to talk about
the KPK. Don't worry, guys, it's getting worse.
We're going to talk about the KPK bill because that's, if anything, that's actually been getting more attention.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think maybe the legislators took advantage of that to slip this one through.
Yeah, that's not a bad point.
Yeah. So that's also expected to go to the House next week where it'll be passed.
Yeah.
And so... Again, a lot of controversy about this because it's seen as weakening the KPK.
Which is so, like, I understand the motivation for lawmakers, but it's one of the only highly trusted public institutions. Just don't fight the KPK.
Well, you know, I mean, it's what are they going to do? I mean, the House has a vested interest in seeing the KPK weakened.
Which is very gross.
Yeah, it's very gross. I mean, just consider the... ruling parties is the party with the most legislators arrested by the KPK. Jokowi's said quite a bit on this. People are, you know, calling his bluff.
I wonder if he is going to have to step it back a little, because there's been, I don't know, the pushback has been extreme. Like, I haven't seen anything like that against him ever. I
doubt he will, but you know, we'll get to this next week. But you know, I think from what I'm seeing is that certain parties are trying to build up this idea that the KPK has an Islamist bent.
Oh God!
Have you heard about this? There's a Taliban faction of the KPK.
Oh no! I just read about this. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So. For me, I think that looks like they're trying to make it seem like this is about reforming the KPK from that.
As opposed to defanging it.
Right. So they're going to frame it that way. And I don't see anything good coming out of this.
No.
Okay. So, yeah, we'll get more into the KPK bill next week.
There's a lot to unpack there.
So there's a very illiberal bent to this current administration, and it doesn't look like it's going to get more liberal anytime soon.
I don't know. It's really amazing to me the amount of conversations that I have with friends daily now where it's like, I voted for him in 2014 and this is what he's done.
Right.
How dare he after all the promises? I don't know.
Right. So, I think we'll find that, you know, Tempo did have a point with their cover. Yeah.
Oh, God. All right. Well, that's a downer to end it on.
Yeah. Oh, no, wait. We have something even worse.
Oh.
Yeah. Our favorite director, who may or may not be Oscar nominated, is actually coming out with a new movie next month.
Yes. I think we've had some special requests for your special take on the Livy Zhang saga. Should we quickly get into it?
I'd rather not, because apparently under the new criminal code, I can charge for defamation. But let's just say I'm not impressed by her exaggerations.
Mm.
Livy Zhang is us on LinkedIn, right? As someone once said. And she's got a new movie coming out. This is supposed to be an Oscar-nominated director. But her movie is basically PR for Nahdlatul Ulama.
Yep.
Sorry, the Muslim organization. So basically, they're executive producing this whole thing. And it's called The Santri. It's about the history of NU, which...
It sounds fascinating.
Not. Not. So like, as with, you know, every other Livy Zhang movie, I look very much forward to not seeing it in the movies. And, you know, and I hope you guys do too. Okay. Okay, so... of all the Indonesian movies that are in theaters right now, so obviously the big one right now is Gundala, right?
Yeah,
the
superhero movie,
Joko Anwar's movie. And that was a budget of something like 37 billion.
Woof, so they're rupiah, I think.
I should say rupiah, 37 billion rupiah. Do you know how much the Santri goes for? This, by the way, this is without all the special effects that a superhero movie.
Yeah. And given that it's kind of the blockbuster of the year, the Santri can't be anywhere near it.
Oh, it's only... 50 billion.
How do you even stretch a budget like that? That is amazing.
I don't know.
I kind of want to see it now just to see what she's done.
What
too.
You get for 50 billion? Yeah. That still won't drag me into the cinema.
No.
Yeah.
Do you reckon it's going to get us showing at 21?
Yeah, for sure. Like her other movie was.
They've got my favorite popcorn, so I'm there.
Really?
Oh, yeah. That like chemical butter.
Let it just be said that we're not being sponsored in any way by Cinema 21.
But if they would like to.
If they would like to, we're absolutely open to it. Yeah.
Maybe Cinemax, if they're open to it. All right. Well, we'll see you next week with a very sad one from us on the KPK.
All right. So we'll see you next week then.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Thanks. Bye. Indonesia Dan Line Line is a production of Gentle Media.
Our producers are Lisa Siregar, Christabel Pilar, and Budi Darmawan.
Our editor is Satria Utomo. Ta-da!
Sampai jumpa!